You may have noticed that over the last 3 weeks, as we've heard the scriptures from the prophet Isaiah, we've heard the vision of a world that does not exist yet, of a time that has not come into being. We've heard the hope of a world at peace in which nations will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. We've heard the prophecy of a world of justice in which leaders will execute justice for the lowly of the land and not attend to the needs of the wealthy and the powerful. And today we've heard the hope of a world in which sickness and healing and suffering and pain will be no more. Listen again to Isaiah's words. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped, and the lame shall leap like a deer, and the tongue of the unspeaking will shout aloud. We don't live in that world yet. As much as medical technology has advanced over the last 28 years, centuries, we're still dealing with the same problems. Our bodies age, our bodies break down, we experience pain and suffering and aches, and we want healing. It's been an eternal hope, but we're not there yet. It's interesting that in our culture, the same hope gets expressed, but in different ways. For instance, remember Star Trek and Captain Kirk and Spock and Bones, the doctor? And Bones had this amazing little device, a scanner probe. I looked it up on the internet. It's called a scanner probe. And he would run it over the patient and it would beep its lights and tell him what was wrong with the patient. And then this scanner probe would emit energy that would awaken the healing powers in the body of the patient, and the patient would be healed instantly. This is pretty much the same hope expressed in terms of science fiction. Or in the most present conversation, we talk about stem cell research as being a potentially miraculous new technology where we can take stem cells and train them to grow into anything we want them to grow into, replacement organs or new nerves to heal the paralyzed. All of these are ways of expressing the same hope that Isaiah expressed 28 centuries ago for a world in which pain and suffering and sickness will be no more. But we're not there yet. Other day, I was in the grocery store, and at the checkout counter, I always take a look at the periodicals that are there for purchase. You know, you hear some amazing news in some of those periodicals. One of the things at the checkout stand was this month's Reader's Digest. And at the very top of the Reader's Digest, in bold white type on a green field, were the words, "How to Zap Your Aches and Pains." And I didn't buy the magazine, so I can't tell you what it says. But what this tells me is this. You know, the Reader's Digest is mostly read by, I think, an older group of people, and the marketing experts who designed the cover know how to reach older folks. And, you know, I'm starting to feel arthritis in my thumbs, and maybe I'm one of them myself. I'm getting there anyway. But how to zap your aches and pains. People will go to great lengths to get rid of their disease and their aches and their pains and their illnesses and their suffering. They'll search the internet. They'll travel to the Mayo Clinic. They'll call Dr. Dina Dell on the radio. People will do anything to get better. And that brings up, what is healing? What is the healing that we can hope for? I think the main point I want to make today is that healing is a little bit different than curing. I mean, curing is one form of healing. If you cut your finger, you can put a Band-Aid on it, and in a week, it'll be cured. You will have been totally healed. Or if you go skiing and you break your leg, in a few months, if it's set right and you're young enough for your bones to grow back, your leg can be as good as new. What might not heal is the fear that you might develop for skiing or something like that. But healing and curing are slightly different things. Curing has to do with a change that takes place within us that helps us to be at peace with our condition and gives us the ability to live life fully despite our circumstances, so that we can suffer from a condition, but we can be healed from that condition if it does not dispower us, we are still enabled to live life fully and joyfully. A few years ago, my mom came out and visited from New Jersey. And the day that I remember, we went out to Angel Island, drove to Tiburon, took the ferry out to Angel Island, walked around the perimeter of the island, and had lunch on a park bench overlooking the Golden Gate Bridge. It was a beautiful day, beautiful sunshine in the fall of the year. Just a glorious time. We got back on the ferry, went back to Tiburon, did some window shopping. And while we were walking down the streets of Tiburon, we saw a sight that really shook my mother. Now, she's a woman now in her mid-70s who remains very active. But that sight that we saw on the street really shook her. It was a very elderly woman. She must have been in her 90s. And she was out for a walk. And she was dressed in her bathrobe. And she had a caregiver with her who had her arms around her. And this woman was taking the tiniest steps so slowly. It was obvious that she was crippled. She was in a lot of pain. Every step took an infinite amount of effort. And my mom turned to me and said, "Don't ever let me get like that." Now, she wants to go before her body gets that frail. And I talked to her on the way to church today, and she still feels that way. But it occurs to me, there's another way you can look at this woman in her 90s walking so painfully down the street. And that is this. She was healed in the sense that her being crippled and lame wasn't keeping her cooped up inside her house. She was outside in that beautiful Tiburon afternoon. She was breathing the fresh air. She was walking down the street of the town in which she had lived her entire life. She may not have been able to walk freely and easily like we do. She was taking those painful little steps. But when Isaiah talks about the lame being able to leap like a deer, she wasn't literally doing that, but metaphorically, just to be out in the sun and walking, painful though it was, she was leaping for joy with each step she was able to take. 265 years ago, a very famous hymn was written. It was written by Charles Wesley, the brother of John Wesley, who was the founder of the Methodist movement. And Charles's claim to fame was that he is perhaps the most prolific songwriter, hymn writer we've ever had in the English language. He wrote more than 5,000 hymns in the course of his life, some of which are among the most treasured hymns of the Christian church. You may not realize it, but we already sang one of his hymns in the service today. "Hark, the herald angels sing, glory to the newborn king, peace on earth and mercy mild, God and sinners reconciled." That's Charles Wesley's great Christmas hymn. But 265 years ago, on the first anniversary of what he called his conversion and what I probably would call his spiritual reawakening, he wrote a hymn to celebrate the first anniversary of this event in his life. It's a very significant hymn for Methodists because since 1780, it has been the first hymn in every Methodist hymnal published. It's the hymn, "O for a thousand tongues to sing my great Redeemer's praise." And in one of the verses of that hymn, he writes words which allude directly to this verse from Isaiah chapter 35. "Hear him, you deaf, his praise, you dumb, your loosened tongues employ. You blind, behold your Savior come, and leap, you lame, for joy." Those same four images that we read in Isaiah 35 are this verse out of the 17 verses of that hymn. We don't sing them all. But why this image of healing on the anniversary of his spiritual awakening? Perhaps it was because, like his brother John, faith for him for many years brought him no joy. He was an Anglican priest, the son of an Anglican priest, but faith seemed to him to be a duty. He never felt good enough to deserve God's love. He never felt like he believed strongly enough. He never felt like he was strong enough to withstand his fears. But then he discovered the grace of God, which let him know that he was God's son, that he was beloved by God exactly the way he was. And in realizing that, he could begin to love himself and accept himself and be at peace with himself. He experienced the healing of his own soul. So during Advent, that is what we wait for. We wait for the coming of the one who brings healing, the one who tells us, "I love you exactly the way you are. With all your warts, with all your flaws, you are the unique person that God made and loves." And when we can accept that we are accepted by God, fully, totally, that is our healing, and that is our salvation. So let us await with expectation the coming of the one who brings healing for our spirits and healing for our bodies.